What's up, everyone, and welcome back to New Release Reactions here on Cinematic Reviews. As always, I'm your host, Chris, and this is a show about all things movie and TV. Every week, I break down and review the newest releases like Oppenheimer, beloved franchises, and even directors like Christopher Nolan. You can support the show by hitting that follow button on your favorite podcast network, as well as following it on all social media platforms. All those handles can be found on either the Cinematic Reviews Facebook page or the show's website at podpage.com/cinematicreviews. It helps out a lot, and I appreciate all the love and support out there from everyone. To kick today's episode off, let's head over to the new release report. Welcome back to another new release report here on Cinematic Reviews. Over on Disney Plus, Marvel Studios' Secret Invasion finale arrives this Wednesday. You can catch up on the previous 5 episodes today. Also streaming now is Assembled, The Making of Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. And then on August 2nd, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 will finally arrive on Disney Plus. Over on Prime Video, we have Jack Ryan, the final season streaming right now. All episodes are out now. You can also check out the previous 3 seasons of the show as well. On Apple TV Plus, Hijack starring Idris Elba is streaming now. New episodes drop every Wednesday. Platonic starring Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne. All episodes are out now, so check that show out. The Crowded Room starring Tom Holland is also streaming right now. The season finale will arrive on Friday. And then also news to streaming is Steph Curry Underrated. This is the documentary on the beloved NBA star Steph Curry of the Warriors. Over on VOD, The Flash, Transformers Rise of the Beast, Ruby Gilman, Teenage Kraken, and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 are all out now to buy or rent on the streaming service. And then on in theaters, we have Oppenheimer, which I will talk about in just a few moments, along with Barbie, Sound of Freedom, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1, Insidious, The Red Door, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, and Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny are also out in theaters, so check out those today. Looking ahead, we have Haunted Mansion and Talk to Me coming out this weekend on July 28th. Then we have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutant Mayhem coming out on August 2nd, as well as Meg 2, The Trench starring Jason Statham on August 4th. And then on August 11th, we have Gran Turismo based on a true story. This is the film that is based off of the popular video game on PlayStation. Well, that is this week's new release report. Tune in next week for another report on all the new releases coming out. The Man Who Moved the Earth, Oppenheimer, is next.
We imagine a future. And our imaginings horrify us. They won't fear it until they understand it. And they won't understand it until they've used it. Theory will take you only so far. I don't know if we can be trusted with such a weapon. But we have no choice.
Oppenheimer was released on July 21st. The film stars Cillian Murphy as J. Robert Oppenheimer, Robert Downey Jr. as Louis Strauss, Matt Damon as Lieutenant General Leslie Groves, Emily Blunt as Kitty Oppenheimer, and Florence Pugh as Jean Tatlock. The film was directed by Christopher Nolan, who is best known for films like Interstellar, Inception, The Prestige, Memento, and of course, The Dark Knight Trilogy. The film has so far grossed $171 million worldwide against an estimated $100 million budget. In order for the black and white scenes to be of the same quality as the rest of the film, Kodak developed the first ever black and white film stock for IMAX. Matt Damon was on a break from acting as a promise to his wife under one condition: it would go on hold if Nolan called. As luck would have it, Nolan did call Damon and offered him the role of Leslie Groves. Nolan got the idea to cast Cillian Murphy as Oppenheimer when looking at the cover photo of American Prometheus, which the film is based on. Murphy lost weight and stuck to a strict diet to achieve Oppenheimer's gaunt physique. Nolan stated during a Collider interview that there are no CGI shots in the film, and it was shot entirely in IMAX. This is actually Nolan's longest running film, clocking in at 180 minutes. No drums were used for the film's score. Nolan and composer Ludwig Göransson felt that using a sound typically associated with the military would be inauthentic to musically capture the character of Oppenheimer. I think that was an excellent decision on their part. Sam Mendes originally optioned the rights to the book American Prometheus, which this film is based on, and was going to be the follow-up film to Jarhead, but his iteration never got off the ground, unfortunately. He instead went on to make Revolutionary Road. I think that was another great decision. I think Nolan was the perfect director for this, and I will talk about that throughout this episode. The Trinity detonation scene uses a combination of practical effects and digital compositing. Multiple explosions were performed practically with a hybrid of gasoline, aluminum, magnesium, and propane substances involving big miniatures. These were filmed at high speeds from different angles and then layered using digital effects to create the iconic mushroom cloud that you see in the film. And then lastly, the bomb is detonated at the hour and 52 minute mark of the film. In the film, Oppenheimer states that they will know if the bomb was successful in 1 hour and 52 minutes. That is the kind of detail that Christopher Nolan loves to put into his films. Well, Oppenheimer is finally here, and I gotta say, it is fantastic. Nolan has once again delivered audiences an incredible experience at the movies. If Quentin Tarantino didn't exist, Christopher Nolan would definitely be my favorite director. I love all of his films for different reasons, and Oppenheimer is no exception to that. In order to give my full, honest review of the film, I'm going to be spoiling a bit of it. So if you haven't seen the film yet, pause the episode right here and go out to see it. I really don't want to spoil anything about this for listeners who haven't seen it. You need to just experience it for yourself. It's a film you're going to want to watch on the biggest and loudest screen possible. There are no IMAXs around my city, unfortunately, so I had to see it on the ultra screen at the Marcus Theater in my home city. But it was still a great experience. Loud Dolby speakers there, big screen. It was just an incredible experience. Once you have experienced one of the year's biggest films, come back and listen to the rest of the episode, because I do have some really, really cool thoughts. For those who have seen Oppenheimer, let's dive into one of history's biggest events. Cue the full spoiler territory warning. So Oppenheimer is based on the book American Prometheus. I have not read the book yet, but it's definitely on my to-do list, especially after watching Oppenheimer. I'm very interested in learning more about J. Robert Oppenheimer, quantum mechanics, all the science that went into making the atomic bomb, and everything I can get my hands on this part of history. Nolan tends to do that to me. It happened after I watched Interstellar, Tenet, even The Prestige. Within Interstellar, it was black holes. I was really curious on researching all that stuff. With Tenet, it was about entropy and the reversing of time. With The Prestige, it was the world of magicians and Tesla and Edison and all that stuff. So I was really fascinated with all that stuff after watching Nolan kind of present it to me in film format. Now, with Oppenheimer, it's the atomic bomb. It's quantum mechanics. It's Oppenheimer himself. Nolan gets very, very scientific in his films, which is really fascinating to me. In Oppenheimer, he presents to the audience how they were able to make the atomic bomb and the hoops they kind of had to jump through to achieve its success, whether it was, you know, the actual science behind it, politics, just society in general. It was just really, really fascinating how Nolan was able to present this on screen with a very cohesive story and a great cast. Now, Cillian Murphy plays J. Robert Oppenheimer, and he was incredible in the film. I'm pretty positive that he'll get our nomination for Best Actor for this. This is totally a film that is major, major Oscar bait. The question is, will he win it? That I'm not sure of. I think we're too early to call that right now. Murphy definitely deserves at least a nomination at the very least. In previous Nolan films, he has more of a supporting character. He now finally leads a film for Nolan, and he totally killed it. This film honestly doesn't work without Nolan or Murphy, or even the rest of the cast for that matter. And the cast list is really incredible. We have Emily Blunt playing Oppenheimer's second wife, Kitty. Matt Damon as Lieutenant General Leslie Groves, who has a very, very close relationship with Oppenheimer. And we get to see that kind of grow throughout this film. Robert Downey Jr. plays Louis Strauss, who ends up being kind of the antagonist of the film. Florence Pugh is Oppenheimer's first wife, Jean Tatlock. And they have a very toxic relationship. We also see Jack Quaid, Josh Peck, Josh Hartnett, Dane DeHaan, who I had no idea was in this. We have Jason Clarke, Kenneth Branagh, who is no stranger to Nolan. When I go through Nolan's legacy, you're going to hear his name pop up a few times. We even get Gary Oldman, who shows up for one scene at the end of the film as President Truman, who I had no idea was in this film either. That was an element of the film I wasn't expecting. Reacting to different members of the cast as they were popping up on screen because they were kept secret. I caught myself numerous times in the theater going, "Oh shit, it's Gary Oldman," or "Hell yeah, that's Dane DeHaan in a Nolan movie." It added a surprisingly fun element to a very, very serious film centered around the moral reasoning of creating this world-ending device that was the atomic bomb. It was just a really surprisingly fun aspect of the film that I wasn't expecting to experience. So at the beginning of the film, Oppenheimer has this desire of creating the atomic bomb for two reasons. One, to beat the Nazis and Russians in this nuclear arms race that we kind of go through. And then second, simply for the science. At the end, though, we see Oppenheimer start to question the reason behind using a device that is so dangerous. It took the U.S. dropping bombs on Japan to open up his eyes to the reality of creating such a dangerous weapon. It's really fascinating, and Murphy did an incredible job at portraying this on screen. I love the last couple of seconds of the film where it's revealed that Oppenheimer and Einstein talking, and we get it revealed to exactly what they were talking about. You know, if you remember at the beginning of the film, we have Robert Downey Jr.'s character Strauss kind of inviting Oppenheimer to the university and to become part of the education system there. He talks with Einstein, who I guess he has a previous relationship with. From what I understand, this is a different scientist in real life. They just Nolan kind of changed it to Albert Einstein, probably because he felt that Einstein would be more of a well-known scientist. But from what I'm reading and listening, it sounds like Oppenheimer met with a different scientist in this moment in time. But regardless of that, I think the actor who played Einstein was very, very good. The end of the film is where we get revealed of what their conversation was about. Throughout the film, it's presented to the audience that there is this chance that the bomb could go off, that a chain reaction will begin and it won't stop. It'll just keep firing neutrons at nucleus, and it will just basically set the entire atmosphere on fire. Then when we get to see that on screen of what it would look like, it's a very, very frightening image. We're kind of seeing this through Oppenheimer's head. That's what a lot of this film is. It's seeing through Oppenheimer's eyes and kind of what he is envisioning in his head as he's experiencing these moments. What really spoke to me was Oppenheimer saying that the potential is still there, meaning with nuclear weapons becoming more and more, I guess, accessible is what you could call it. The potential of the world being destroyed is becoming greater. Oppenheimer was basically saying that we will destroy the world with these weapons. We will cause a chain reaction that will engulf the world in flames. It's freaking mind-blowing, and I just love how Nolan presented this entire concept on screen, and just kind of how he wrapped it up at the end, because throughout this whole film, we see these characters are just really stressed out about how the potential of annihilating the world if they set off this device is so great. But what they don't understand, and what Oppenheimer finally realizes at the end, is that we may not have destroyed the world now, but the potential is still there in the future. Like, we will create these weapons at a mass supply that eventually we are just going to destroy each other with these weapons, and that is the chain reaction that will cause the Earth's annihilation. It's just freaking wild that this was in a Nolan film, and that Nolan was able to write and just kind of present this on screen. It was just fascinating to watch. And the cast did such an amazing job as well, bringing Nolan's script to life. The film also includes a very, very common Nolan element, and that is juggling multiple timelines. We see it in The Prestige, Memento, Tenet, Interstellar, Inception, Dunkirk, even the Dark Knight movies kind of dip into that for a brief moment. Specifically, Batman Begins with the jumping of the different time periods with Bruce Wayne, and kind of showing you how he became Batman and what the experiences kind of drove him to become this Dark Knight in Gotham. When you walk into a Nolan film, you can pretty much expect this. You know, you can expect to see multiple timelines being thrown at you at once with a very, very high concept like the theory of relativity or dreams or reverse entropy like in Tenet, which is probably one of his most confusing and talked about films for having such a high concept that he's trying to tackle. In Oppenheimer's case, it's quantum mechanics and how the atomic bomb was created and all that math and science that went into creating this device to essentially explode without annihilating the Earth. That entire sequence of them setting off the bomb was freaking awesome. And that's probably the understatement of the year. It's something you're just going to have to experience for yourself in the theater. When it goes off, it's very quiet, which I thought was a very, very nice detail that Nolan put in there, because they are so far away. Eventually, we hear the blast, and it's freaking loud. My theater was shaking. It was visually incredible as well. Seeing the iconic mushroom cloud in the sky and the massive explosion was truly breathtaking. So you definitely want to see this in the loudest theater possible, because the effect of the blast is so good and so real that it's going to shake you in the theater. And it's just truly, truly fantastic on how Nolan pulled this sequence off. The film ends up revealing that Robert Downey Jr.'s Strauss character, who we have seen throughout the film, he's kind of narrating certain parts of the story along with Oppenheimer. Apparently, he was behind all the pushback towards Oppenheimer after the creation of the bomb. This is where we get the three different timelines converging on one another. The first timeline that we see is Oppenheimer being brought forth in front of this board or group of men. I can't remember the name. I think it's like the AECT or something like that. I don't remember for sure, but it's a group of men in the science community, and they are here to vote on revoking Oppenheimer's security clearance on the grounds that he is being suspected of being a communist spy for the Russians. The second timeline is the creation of the bomb, and this is Oppenheimer retelling them step by step on how it all played out in his eyes. And then the third timeline is Robert Downey Jr. sitting in front of a Congress hearing. He is seeking a chair on the president's cabinet. Turns out, though, that it's actually a hearing to get him discredited for putting Oppenheimer through the hearing that we see in Timeline 2. So that's a big, giant reveal in the third act of the film, which has been pretty controversial. Not a lot of people are high on that third act. I think it was played out beautifully. It blew my mind in the theater because I honestly did not see that coming. Strauss apparently has kept a grudge this entire time over the fact that Oppenheimer kind of pushed back against him when he was trying to input on the creation of the bomb. So Strauss, through like this 5-year span, kind of created this ruse to get Oppenheimer discredited in order to seek revenge on him and to secure himself a spot on Truman's cabinet. Strauss, though, ends up getting ousted in front of that Senate hearing and then does not get the cabinet position. It was just a truly incredible reveal. It played out very, very well on screen, I think. It blew my mind, you know, just like everything else in this film. I think Robert Downey Jr. was phenomenal in that role, and it's really nice to see him kind of step out of the Marvel phase that he has been in the last 10, 15 years, and getting back to the actor that we saw him in before he became Iron Man, which he was fantastic as Iron Man. It's just that it's nice to finally kind of get the old Robert Downey Jr. back, because he's a truly, truly amazing actor. And I think him being tied down to Iron Man kind of just kept him in one path of his career. Now, with him being done with Iron Man, he can really stretch out his legs and do a lot of other things, you know, like teaming up with Nolan, or possibly, you know, he could become teaming up with Scorsese or Tarantino, or he can do so many other projects now that he's kind of in this post Iron Man era of his career. So was fantastic in this film. I was really glad to see him pop up in the trailer, and he just blew my expectations out of the water in this role as Louis Strauss. As you can tell, I really, really love this film. I went into it with really high hopes, and I wasn't disappointed. It's a truly incredible part of Christopher Nolan's legacy. I highly recommend this film to everyone. I really urge you to see it on the biggest and loudest screen possible. It's definitely worth it. I'm planning on seeing it again in a couple weeks. So definitely go out and support this film at your local theater. Spread the word also. Word of mouth is the best way to help a film succeed, especially in today's world where streaming has kind of taken over a large part of this business. I understand that a lot of people have been kind of out on the theaters lately because of the streaming and the easy access to it. But Nolan's films are the kind of films that you want to see at least once in the theaters, because he, just like Tom Cruise and McQuarrie and everything that they're doing, Nolan makes these films for theaters. He wants you to experience it on the biggest and loudest screens possible. And I know with technology, things are getting better with the TVs and sound systems at home, but it's a different feeling in a theater with the way their setup are, especially if you are able to go to an IMAX. That is the true format to view Nolan's films in. Oppenheimer specifically is made to be seen on a 70 millimeter camera in an IMAX. Now, from what I understand, there's a very, very small amount of those in the US. But if you have the chance, or the access, I should say, to a 70 millimeter IMAX screening, definitely go to it. It's worth the money. It's worth your time. I know it's a 3-hour runtime and it can be a little scary, but it's definitely worth it, because every scene, every quote, every detail in this film is beautifully done. And it's 3 hours of just pure Nolan goodness. And just definitely go out and see this at least once in theaters, because it's an experience that you're not going to want to miss. Let's take a quick break before diving into the legacy of Christopher Nolan's career so far. G Check out the Fast and Furious season going on right now. Every week I break down and review each installment of the beloved franchise. Next up, I'll be breaking down Fast and Furious, the fourth film of the series that gave the franchise a second life. So join me each week as I discuss my thoughts on one of Hollywood's biggest franchises, only on Cinemac Reviews. So with the release of Oppenheimer, I finally get to kind of dive into my thoughts on Christopher Nolan himself and kind of his filmography that he has gone through so far, which I haven't been able to do really on this podcast. So I'm really glad that I finally get some time to kind of break down his career and each of his films, which I love for many different reasons. I've been rewatching his film solely. I was able to get through Tenet, Interstellar, Dunkirk, Memento. I finally watched Following, his first film, for the first time. I'm planning on watching Tenet one more time because I'm really trying to nail down that high concept. When I get to that one, I'll talk about it. I watched The Prestige, which is one of my favorites. Eventually, I want to get to Inception again, which I haven't seen in a few years. And then, of course, his Dark Knight trilogy, which is one of my favorite parts of his career. So first, he made Following. This came out in 1998. This was his first film that he made. It's a very, very small film. It's only an hour and 10 minutes long. It's in black and white. It's about a young writer who follows this stranger in this string of burglaries around town. They kind of sneak in and kind of mess with people's property. They steal some things that they can exchange for money. But it turns out that this was all a elaborate ruse. The guy that he meets, I believe his name was Cobb. He ends up planning this entire thing in order to frame our protagonist, who they call the writer in this. He wants to frame him for murder. It's just I was not sure what to expect from this film, but I truly had a blast watching it. Like I said, it's a very, very small film. It goes pretty quick. It's definitely, check this out if you are a huge Nolan fan. This is kind of where he kind of first presents to us this multiple timeline element of his films. Also includes a big twist at the end, like I said, where it gets revealed that this whole string of burglaries was just a kind of rehearsal for the big reveal at the end, which is truly, truly fascinating to watch unfold about murder and burglary and relationships and all that stuff. So definitely check out The Following if you have not seen it. Then after that, he went on to make Memento. This came out in 2000. It's been critically acclaimed ever since it came out. From what I'm seeing, a lot of people have ranked it their favorite Nolan or definitely in their top three. When I get to my rankings, I'll reveal on where it goes for me. But this is a really, really incredible film. It stars Guy Pearce alongside Carrie-Anne Moss, Joe Pantoliano. Mark Boone Jr. shows up, who has been a major player in the Nolan legacy. He has popped up in a few of his films. You probably have seen him more notably in the Dark Knight trilogy. This is about a Guy Pearce who plays Leonard. He is suffering short-term memory loss in an attempt to track down his wife's murderer. And this film is told backwards, actually, and it's truly, truly fascinating how Nolan was able to kind of execute this on screen, because it's a very, very confusing concept. I remember when I first watched this, I had to watch it again because it just was so confusing and it blew my mind. But after watching it, you know, three or four times, I finally grasped it a little easier. And that's the thing with Nolan. You will come to find out when you go through his films, a couple of them, you know, like Memento and Inception, Interstellar and Tenet especially, it warrants multiple viewings. Like, I've seen Tenet eight or nine times now, and I'm planning on seeing it again this weekend. And I'm still, you know, slowly nailing down under the concept of that film. Memento is kind of where it all starts, where he starts to dive into these high concept ideas and tries to explain them to the audiences. Sometimes it's pretty straightforward, like Inception is pretty straightforward. Memento and Tenet and even Interstellar at points, that's a little more confusing for, you know, the general audience. But Memento specifically is one where you can pretty much grasp after maybe three watches, maybe four, depending on just the person. It's different from everyone I know. For me personally, it took about three or four times to nail it down, but it's truly a remarkable film. Guy Pearce is amazing in it. Carrie Ann Moss is awesome in there as Natalie. And then you have Joe Pantolini, who you probably remember from Bad Boys as the captain in those movies. He plays Teddy in here. He's really good as well. It's really, really awesome, awesome film. A great second film for a incredible director that is Nolan. Then he goes on to do Insomnia in 2002, which stars Al Pacino and the late Robin Williams. Al Pacino plays a detective who is on a homicide case in a northern town where the sun doesn't set. This meaning the referring to the title of the film Insomnia, which is what Al Pacino's character suffers from because of, you know, the long lasting sunlight and the job. Essentially, he is unable to sleep. I think we see him sleep for like 2 seconds in this film. So he's kind of running on fumes this entire time. He is investigating Rob Williams' character, Walter Finch, who is suspected of murdering a local teen. Definitely not one of my favorites of his, but it still has a really good Al Pacino and Robin Williams performances. Robin Williams specifically, I haven't seen him play a villain that many times, so it's really nice to see him in a different light as far as his acting performances. And I think he was really good in this. You know, he was a real creepy, psychotic being in here. And it's just really, really awesome. Again, it's Nolan tackling more. There's not really a big high concept in there. It's more of his, you know, Nolan diving into the crime and murder case sphere. You know, for all those crime junkies out there, this would be a good film for you to watch. I myself am a huge crime junkie, so I really, really love this film. Then he goes on to do the Batman films, starting with Batman Begins in 2005. Amazing film, probably one of the best Batman films when it came out. Probably the best, honestly, when it came out in 05. Stars Christian Bale, of course, as Bruce Wayne / Batman. Michael Caine as Alfred. Liam Neeson as Deckard. Gary Oldman as Jim Gordon. We have Cillian Murphy as Dr. Jonathan Crane, a.k.a. Scarecrow in here. Just an incredible cast. Morgan Freeman as Lucius Fox. This is where we see Mark Boone Jr. as a Flash. That's probably where most people know him from. That and Sons of Anarchy, of course. But yeah, Batman Begins is the origin story of how Bruce Wayne become Batman. Truly spectacular film. I have my issues with Bale as Batman, particularly the voice that he decides to use in there. But I think he's a really, really good Bruce Wayne. Michael Caine is truly a fantastic Alfred. And Liam Neeson, of course, is great as the villain of the film. He ends up being Ra's al Ghul, who is a popular Batman villain that you're probably familiar with. But yeah, it's just incredible. This was the first film of his trilogy, and it just blew everyone's mind when it came out. Fell in love with it on my first watch when I first saw it back in 05. It's truly, truly an amazing film. Then he takes a little break from the Batman world, and he makes The Prestige in 2006, which is one of my favorite films by Nolan, for sure. This, again, stars Christian Bale as Alfred and Hugh Jackman as Angier. they are competing magicians in London during the 1890s. They have this huge rivalry that kind of spills into their family life and essentially destroys both of their lives. Christian Bale and everything that he has done, his wife, who is played by Rebecca Hall, unfortunately ends up killing herself over this magic competition with Jackman. But before that, we see Jackman's wife, who is played by Piper Perabo. She ends up dying on stage during one of their acts as a collateral damage to Christian Bale's desire to push each trick to the limit. He wants to make it more intense, make it more real. But unfortunately, Jackman loses his wife and as a result of Bale's obsession to improve the acts constantly. And so that kind of jettisons them into this rivalry that spans for years. And they have one mission and one mission only, and that is to outdo each other with their magic and to just annihilate them. This, again, is one of those kind of high concept movies that warrant multiple viewings. But once the reveal happens, where it turns out that Christian Bale has a twin brother and that's how they've been doing the stunt doubling, everything starts to kind of make sense. There have been a couple, it's fun to go back and rewatch this after that reveal and kind of trying to pick out which Bale is on screen at one time. Because there are, if you pay attention, there are some slight details that kind of reveal which Bale is on screen at what time. And then, of course, we get the big reveal of Hugh Jackman and the machine that Tesla created for him, where he is cloning himself in order to do that trick his way. Truly, truly fascinating. This is probably the more kind of less scientific, more fantasy film of Nolan's, because he's dipping into this actual magic, but he's kind of mixing in science, you know, with the Tesla character to kind of say, hey, science and magic can kind of work together. But this is more of his fantasy type of films than say like Interstellar or Tenet, where he's actually using a science theory to move the plot along, whereas Prestige is more magic based, but with a little mix of illusions and science there as well. But truly, truly spectacular film. One of my favorites. It will be high on my rankings list for sure. So after the Prestige, then he dives back into the Batman world with The Dark Knight in 2008, which blew everyone's mind when this came out in 2008. Bale returns as Bruce Wayne. But what really struck a chord for everybody was Heath Ledger's Joker. Heath Ledger unfortunately passed away before this film was released, and that, I remember that huge headline when that came out. But Heath Ledger was fantastic in this film as the Joker. He of course won the Oscar for it, which he truly, truly succeeded in. He deserved that award for sure. He was menacing and chaotic and just perfect as the Joker. We also get Aaron Eckhart as Harvey Dent, aka Two-Face. Michael Caine returns as Alfred. Maggie Gyllenhaal takes over the Rachel character. Katie Holmes played her in Batman Begins, but Maggie Gyllenhaal takes over for this one. Then we get Gary Oldman and Morgan Freeman returning. Just The Dark Knight is, in my opinion, Nolan's best film. For the longest time, it was Inception, and I will get to that next. But I think The Dark Knight is his best film. This kind of sparked the whole Oscar debate as well when they increased the number of Best Picture nominations from 5 to 10. Because this should have been nominated, if not won, for Best Picture. But it's just a true masterpiece for Nolan, and definitely love rewatching this for sure. Then after that, he moves on to Inception in 2010, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Cillian Murphy once again, Elliot Page, Tom Hardy. Just truly, truly spectacular. Incredible film about dreams and kind of going deeper and deeper into the dream world. So DiCaprio plays this thief who steals corporate secrets through the use of dream sharing. They use this machine that allows them to go into other people's dreams, and they are able to take information that they want. But what Inception is about is planting an idea into somebody's head. You know, it's one thing to steal an idea from someone's head. It's another to put an idea in their head. So that's kind of what this film is about. DiCaprio is hired to put an idea into Cillian Murphy's character's head in order to gain more corporate power in the world. Fascinating film. Love the effects. Love the story. Love the characters in here. It's just a truly, truly spectacular film. For the longest time, it was my favorite Nolan film, but then after rewatching The Dark Knight a few more times, it's definitely a close second for sure, but another masterpiece by Nolan. After Inception, we come to The Dark Knight Rises, which is the conclusion to his Batman trilogy. This was a huge film in 2012. I remember going to the midnight premiere for this back when they had midnight premieres. It's the lower of the trilogy for me, but it's still a fantastic film. One of my favorites of Nolan's. Tom Hardy plays Bane. Christian Bale, of course, is back as Bruce Wayne. It also stars Anne Hathaway, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and then we see Gary Oldman and Morgan Freeman and Michael Caine return. Another incredible experience from Nolan. We see an aged Bruce Wayne. It's been about 8 years since the events of The Dark Knight, but Bruce Wayne comes back as Batman in order to take down Bane, who has kind of taken over Gotham. And all chaos breaks loose. But it has its flaws. And when I do get to the Batman season, which is on the schedule, I'll talk about some of the issues I have with it. But overall, it's still a fantastic, fantastic film. If you have not seen the Dark Knight trilogy for whatever reason, definitely check these out. They're a lot different than some of the other Batman films we've seen. The Batman starring Robert Pattinson is probably the closest to him, but still that one's a little more comic booky. What Nolan did with the Batman trilogy was really, really grounded, which was surprising, but also really, really fascinating when that came out. Because, you know, before that we had the Schumachers, which were criticized for being too campy. Then you had the two Burton films, which were really good for the time, but they have since been branded as too dark and too silly at times. And then before that, all we had was the Adam West Batman, which was very cartoonish. So when Nolan came along with his trilogy, it kind of rebranded the Batman character and kind of showed everyone that Batman could exist in our world, given the right money and technology. So that was a really, really fascinating concept to see in a Batman movie. So fantastic job by Nolan on that trilogy. So then after he's done with Batman, he moves on to Interstellar in 2014, which is kind of his love letter to Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey. This stars Matthew McConaughey as Cooper. We have Anne Hathaway, Jessica Chastain, John Lithgow, Michael Caine shows up again, who has, just like Cillian Murphy, is a huge figure in the Nolan legacy. But Matthew McConaughey, this is definitely one of my favorite performances by him. I think he's incredible in this. The cast as a whole is incredible. The story is beautiful. This is about Earth. It has become habitable in the future. We get this giant, you know, dust bowl that's covering the town that Cooper lives in dust. So this forces NASA to create this program to where they send astronauts into space in order to find a habitable planet that they can move the species on. This is where we get the concept of relativity and time changing and black holes and gravity and all that stuff. He gets back to his high concept of filmmaking. Again, this warrants a couple of rewatches. For the most part, I can grasp, you know, relativity and all that stuff. It's when McConaughey travels into the black hole and into the fifth dimension. That's where Nolan kind of loses me, because this is a concept that I'm not too familiar with, you know, different dimensions and higher beings and all this stuff. But all the, you know, the theory of relativity and gravity and the shift in time, it's that I'm pretty knowledgeable now. I think I've seen this film probably 4 times, and I've done some research on, you know, the theory of relativity and all that stuff. So I'm pretty familiar with that. I still need to give this a couple more rewatches so I can understand the third act of this film with him going into the black hole and figuring out what the fifth dimension is. But still, it's an amazing, amazing film. Love the score in here. Probably my favorite score of the Nolan films. Hans Zimmer is truly amazing. He was Nolan's guy for a while. And then starting with Tenet, Nolan switched over to Ludwig Göransson, who is still a really, really amazing composer. But Hans Zimmer is my dude. He is my favorite composer of all time. And what he has done in the Nolan films, specifically Interstellar, is just truly, truly beautiful music. So definitely check out Interstellar if you haven't seen it. If you have, give it a rewatch, because it's fantastic. Truly, truly love it. Then after that, he moves on to Dunkirk, which is his kind of historical significance film. This is during World War II, where we see the British being surrounded by German army, and they have to evacuate this fierce battle during the Second World War. Again, we meet Tom Hardy, Cillian Murphy pops up in here, Kenneth Branagh. This is another kind of timeline shifting where Nolan is giving you a couple of different timelines together. An incredible film. One of the greatest military films for sure. Love the cinematography in here. He actually, from what I understand, so the planes that Tom Hardy is flying in, they installed IMAX cameras, and they actually destroyed a couple of those cameras during production, and they're very, very expensive cameras. But Nolan is one of those directors that likes to do things as practically as much as possible. And Dunkirk is one of those where he wanted to use as little CGI as possible. And it truly worked out in his favor. This is a beautifully made film that I've only seen a couple of times. But I'm really glad that I rewatched it this past weekend and kind of in the hype of Oppenheimer. This would be a great kind of double feature with Oppenheimer, actually, because it's kind of in the same time period in history and kind of goes together really, really nicely. So that would be really fun to do a double feature with those together. Then after Dunkirk, we go to Tenet, which came out in 2020 during the pandemic. That is where the whole streaming and theater debacle kind of happened. This was released in theaters and on HBO Max at the time. I did not see this in theater. I watched this on HBO Max. I wish I would have seen this in the theater because this would have been an incredible movie to watch. This stars John David Washington as protagonist alongside Robert Pattinson, Elizabeth Debicki, Kenneth Branagh, Aaron Taylor Johnson shows up. This is the film that I have been trying to nail down ever since it came out. I've seen it 8 times. I'm planning on a 9th time this weekend. This is about this organization called Tenet that are fighting to protect the entire world from Kenneth Branagh's character, who has a desire to annihilate the world with a bomb. But it's not just any bomb. It's a what we call an inverse bomb that will basically implode the world on itself. So John David Washington's character has been recruited to join Tenet in this fight against Kenneth Branagh's character to stop him from detonating this bomb. This is probably the most confusing film of Nolan's filmography, is tackling this concept of reverse entropy, things going backwards and forwards. As we see in the film, bullets are going in reverse, cars are going in reverse, people are going in reverse. He presents this world of backwards, where we have people going forward and people going backwards in time kind of collide into each other. And it's truly a fascinating film that I've been trying to grasp more because I really, really want to understand what Nolan is talking about in this film. It's just such a very, very high concept that it takes time and work and understanding this film. Particularly the third act is where he really loses me with going into the machines and because at one point we get like 3 or 4 different Pattinsons running around in one scene. So it's hard to keep track of all these characters once they're going backwards and forwards and backwards again. It's an incredible film. I love how it was shot. I love the action sequences in there, especially that fight with John David Washington, who ends up fighting himself because one of himself is inversed. So there, we get this inverse fighting action sequence in this airport. But it's at the same time, it's still very, very confusing, to the point that a lot of it is not very coherent for normal audiences. So you have to really take the time to rewatch these films, this one specifically, and really pay attention to the dialogue. That's it. And even if you need to, throw the subtitles on, because sometimes that helps. There's this long running criticism of Nolan where he focuses so much on the score that the dialogue ends up getting lost because of the audio editing that he does. So this one specifically, I've watched a couple times in with subtitles, and it helps a lot, especially when it comes to Robert Pattinson's character, Neil, explaining some of the science behind, the reverse entropy stuff. So definitely, if you haven't seen this film, definitely give it a watch because it is a really, really well-made film. It's just wrapped around this very, very high concept that takes time to comprehend with multiple rewatches, but it's still an incredible, incredible film to watch. And that brings us to Oppenheimer, which came out this year. Typically, if you noticed, lately Nolan has been doing about a 3-year gap in between films. Early in his career, he was doing about 2 years. There's a couple of ones here like Batman and The Prestige where it was about a 1-year gap there. But now he's in this rhythm of throwing out a movie every 3 years. So his next film, I would guess, wouldn't come out until 2026, 2027. With all the strikes going on in Hollywood right now, I would probably lean more towards 2027 or even 2028, depending on what his next topic is. My guess is he'll tackle, another very, very high concept idea in the science world. But I'm very, very curious to find out what topic he's going to tackle next. But for right now, I mean, rewatch all of his films. Go out and see Oppenheimer. I do plan on doing a Christopher Nolan season. That is on the schedule. I'll be covering, breaking down five of his films, and I'll reveal when we get closer to that which five that I'm going to do. And then, of course, there's also the Batman season that I'm planning on doing as well. That is where I'll cover his trilogy in the Batman world as well. So that is Christopher Nolan's legacy as of right now. One of the greatest actors, directors of our time. And I'm really, really curious to see where his legacy goes on to next with this post-Oppenheimer world. So to end today's episode, I'm going to go over my Christopher Nolan rankings. So Oppenheimer is Nolan's 12th film. Right now I've ranked his first 11, and then once I go through that, I'll finally rank Oppenheimer, which I have been really having trouble with because I'm not quite sure on where I want to rank it. But I'm going to do that on today's episode. So here is where the rankings are right now. At number 11 is Following, 10 Insomnia, 9 Dunkirk, 8 Memento, 7 The Dark Knight Rises, 6 Tenet, 5 Batman Begins, 4 Interstellar, 3 The Prestige, 2 Inception, and then at number 1, which I think is Nolan's best film, is The Dark Knight. So where do I want to put Oppenheimer? This is a hard question. It's not quite on the level of The Dark Knight, Inception, The Prestige, or Interstellar. So that'll bring it to Batman Begins. I think overall, Batman Begins is still a better film. And then that brings us to Tenet. Now, Tenet is, like I keep saying, is very, very high concept. It's one of his most confusing films of his filmography. But it's still a really, really well-made film. Dark Knight Rises, like I said, I have a couple of flaws in there, but still a very, very great film. I think that's kind of the area that I'm looking at. Batman Begins, Tenet, and Dark Knight Rises. I think Oppenheimer, I enjoyed it a little bit more than Memento, even though it doesn't take away from Memento. Memento is still an incredible film, but I think Oppenheimer is just slightly above that. I think what I'm going to do, I'm going to put it, this is tough. I'm going to put it right below The Dark Knight Rises. I'm going to put it in at the new number 8. So that'll knock down Memento to number 9. I think that's where I'm feeling at this moment. When I rewatch it, you know, it's probably going to change. Nolan is one of those directors where with any given rewatch, you know, my list is changing all the time. Like I said, for the longest time, Inception was my favorite of his films. But then one day I just rewatched The Dark Knight and I was just like, this is amazing. This is one of the best films ever made. It's Nolan's best film. So for right now, I'm putting Oppenheimer at number 8. I have a hard time ranking anything above Batman Begins because I think that is one of the greatest Batman films. Definitely one of the best origin stories. And then Tenet is really, really high concept, but there's a great film in there somewhere. Yeah, I'm gonna put Oppenheimer at 8. Like I said, that's probably gonna change with more rewatches. But yeah, we're gonna do that. So this is where the Nolan list is sitting right now. The Dark Knight at number 1, Inception at 2, The Prestige at 3, 4 is Interstellar, 5 Batman Begins, 6 is Tenet, 7 The Dark Knight Rises, 8 is Oppenheimer. That'll bring down to 9 Memento, 10 Dunkirk, 11 Insomnia, and 12 Following. This one of the hardest rankings I have ever done, because with Nolan, you have to really get really nitpicky. You have to start picking out his flaws, because I love all these, even Following and Insomnia, I really, really love for their own reasons. But when you start to rank films like these, I have to focus more on the flaws. And with Oppenheimer, there are a couple of flaws. I didn't really get a chance to talk about them, but it's really, really long. 3 hours is a demanding time. It warrants a 3 hour runtime, but honestly, there's some parts in the middle where you could probably shave off 10 minutes. But not just that, you have to kind of look at the other films as well when I'm ranking. So like The Dark Knight Rises, like I said, yeah, there are flaws, but that opening sequence with the plane and Bane is freaking amazing. Tom Hardy is incredible as Bane in here. Christian Bale, of course, is awesome as Batman. Yeah, I don't care for the voice, but everything else I love about his character. Tenet is amazing because, to me, it's a project. It's making me want to rewatch it. And I think with the action sequences with the inverse stuff is really amazing. It's something I have never seen before in a film. And so that's why it's so much higher. And then, like I said, with Batman Begins, it's the greatest origin story in a comic book world, I think, aside from like Iron Man or Spider-Man. But what Nolan did with the Batman trilogy is truly amazing. And I have a hard time ranking things above that trilogy because they're so well done. And then when you get up to Interstellar and The Prestige and Inception and The Dark Knight, it's just those films to me are just, there's something really special, particularly like Interstellar and Inception. It's just beautifully well crafted and executed. And then like the score, of course, is probably the best score in a Nolan film is in Interstellar. So Oppenheimer is still an amazing film. If you look on IMDb, I gave it 9 stars out of 10, which is actually above the average rating for it. It's just that when you're going up against, films like The Dark Knight and Interstellar and The Prestige and Inception, it's tough, because when you look at my list, it's in the bottom half of Nolan's filmography, but it's still an amazing, amazing film. Like it is one of my favorite films of the year. Actually, if you go over and look, it is now in my top five of 2023. It actually bumped Creed 3 out, and it is now in my top three of the year. So on paper, it may look that I'm kind of down on it, but actually not. It's the fact that Christopher Nolan has given us other amazing, amazing, amazing films that it's just, when you rank it, you have to kind of just really get nitpicky with it. So that is the Christopher Nolan rankings right now. I'll revisit it, of course, when we go into the Christopher Nolan season, and then when he does release a 13th film, which he will do. It's just probably going to be, 3 or 4 years, because he likes to make these event films, and it takes time, because he's one of those directors, like I said, that likes to do things practically. So that takes time, it takes setup, it takes training. So probably in the next 3 or 4 years, we should be getting another Christopher Nolan film, and I'm really, really excited. Well, that'll do it for this week's Christopher Nolan-filled new release reactions episode here on Cinematic Reviews. Tune in next time for the reaction episode of Barbie, which stars Margot Robbie as Barbie and Ryan Gosling as Ken, which is out now in theaters, so go and check that out. Also, check out the Fast and Furious season going on right now on the show. Next, I'll be breaking down and reviewing Fast and Furious, the fourth film in the beloved franchise. Later, everyone.